Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right. I appreciate you guys tuning into the Sliwa Show. By the way, if you miss any part of the show, it's always available on the ESPN app or on iTunes. Lakers Talk. Just look up Lakers Talk. All the shows will be there. And then tomorrow morning, don't forget, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will start things off locally for us, and then we'll stay local. Will Cain, noon to 3, Sedano, 10 to 2, and then 10 to noon, and then I'll come on after Mason and Ireland. Okay, so, you know, there's a lot of conversation of, okay, how can this benefit the Lakers having some time off, or does it hurt the Lakers with time off? I've always just assumed – this has been my assumption. My assumption has been the mileage LeBron has, some of the wear and tear of the season. By the way, not just LeBron. We think about Anthony Davis, Danny Green. Think about players that have had some minor injuries all season long, but mostly you just think of LeBron. LeBron is 35 years old. He's got seven. This is his 17th season in the NBA. I don't have to go through the list of why you would have some concerns about LeBron, but he's playing as good as anybody in the league. And he hopped on the Road Tripping podcast with Richard Jefferson, Shannon Fry, and Ali Clifton from Spectrum Sportsnet. And this is what he said specifically about how the time off affects his body.
My body was like, hey man, what the hell is going on? It's March. It's March 13th. you getting ready for the playoffs. Why are you shutting down right now? Like, and I was right there turning the corner. Like, I felt like I was rounding third base, getting ready for the postseason. So, you know, it's the rest factor. I think it's a little bit overly blown, especially when you're in full swing of things. Now it's different from the lockout year that we had. See, the lockout year, we had the whole offseason. Plus, we also was playing basketball.
Yeah. Now you know,
we were playing basketball still. So it was different because it's not like we were playing games, and then they just said lockout. No, we was already in the offseason preparing for what's to come. So it's been a lot different.
All right, that's LeBron right there. And that's what I kind of find fascinating about this conversation, because – everybody just assumes, hey, you know what? This is beneficial to LeBron. LeBron can use something like this. LeBron can use that stoppage for 30 days, 60 days. I mean, nobody obviously assumed this would be happening. We would as the season progressed after the Lakers beat the Bucks and the Clippers, I had talked about it, and a lot of Laker fans chimed in as well. We would say, okay, well, as we get to April 1st, maybe we start kind of shutting down the LeBrons of the world, ADs of the world, making them play 20, 25 minutes. LeBron's kind of saying the opposite. He's saying his body is telling him, what are we doing? We're supposed to be ramping up right now for that long playoff run. And LeBron is explaining that he doesn't feel like it actually plays to his benefit. Now, I also see LeBron, you go on his Instagram, you see him working out obviously every single day, 5 days a week, I think he said. You know, he's still working out. So LeBron, it spends $1 million a year, over $1 million a year on his body. And every time I'd mention that to Michael Thompson, that was a story that came out a while back. And T would say, that's exactly what a great investment. You know, that $1 million investment that he puts into his body is making him $100 a year or whatever that, you know, LeBron makes with all his endorsements and everything else. But I know that would actually work against him to have some of this time off. The problem, I think, is because it's such a long time off. It's such a stretch that the Lakers are going to be off. And not just the Lakers, every team out there in the league. LeBron also got into, if the season started today, how long would it take this team to get ready for the postseason? Whenever that ends up happening, right? That's been a question mark of, do you get right into the playoffs? Do you do a two-week training camp? Do you play the last 5 games of the regular season? Here's LeBron's stance on that.
Maybe 1.5, 2 weeks of a little mini training camp, and then 5 to 10 games.
Ooh. Wow.
And to get ready for the playoffs. Like,
oh, right.
Because, I mean, if we're just talking about like finishing the regular season, then you don't need that much. You know, you could do a week of training camp and then get back into it. So by then, but You know, when you've been building 6 months of conditioning.
Oh yeah.
And preparation and then like everyone's been like the thing that haven't been the narrative that I don't like, well, now guys get so much rest. Or like LeBron, he's 35, he got so many minutes on his body, now he gets so much rest. It's actually the opposite for me because my body, when we stopped playing, was asking me like, what the hell are you doing?
This is that, by the way, he literally just said everything that I just said. So that was my assumption on LeBron. But we've talked about all these different scenarios. I like hearing it from LeBron. LeBron is the one that's actually going to play. I can say I could have my own opinion. Another radio host can have their opinion. I'm in my living room doing a show. I'm not playing 48 minutes of basketball, and I can't determine. I joked around yesterday. Part of me was joking. The other part of me was 100% serious. I went for a jog yesterday for 30, 40 minutes, and I thought the world was about to end. LeBron is running up and down the floor at age 35 years old, making it happen in his 17th season. He says a 1 to 2 week training camp, 5 to 10 games, there has to be some ramp up. You know, actually what probably my biggest concern would be, and this isn't just for the Lakers, this is just for sports in general. When you go that far, that long of not playing, I know there's off seasons, but it's different. A lot of these guys' bodies are trained for exactly like LeBron's talking about. And you just stop on a dime when you're in your absolute prime, ready to go. And to kind of get that restarted again in 60 days, 90 days, however long it takes. And I just keep saying 60 to 90 days. I don't even know why I keep saying it, but I just hear people say May 1st, June, July, whatever the case is. So I'm just throwing out numbers out there. One concern that I have, and I think is a legitimate concern with all these athletes, eventually when they do come back, I have to imagine the chance for injury has to increase. Their body's just not accustomed to stopping right at the, you know, in the middle, and then all of a sudden revamping for the latter part of the season plus the playoffs. I hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope that's not the case, but I wouldn't be surprised. Mark Teixeira was on Get Up, and he was talking about it from – he was on this morning talking about it more from a baseball perspective. He's like, no, that could be an issue. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. I saw something earlier today where baseball, we talked about this. They're going to have to be creative. They're going to have to find ways to fill up games. They're going to have to play as many games as they can because this is a business and they want as much revenue saved as they possibly can. But with all that in mind, if you're playing double headers and you're going just 7 innings and you have guys playing more games in a less amount of time, of course that can have an effect on the body. Of course, that can be the difference of having an injury or not having an injury. And I hope I'm, you know, obviously wrong, but LeBron gives his timetable. That's fantastic to hear LeBron give a timetable of how he thinks, how long he thinks it would take for him to kind of get his body right and everything else. Last thing I want to play from LeBron. So there's been conversation about playing with no fans, and it might not be an option, right? Like that might be the best case scenario that we have as sports fans is to still see our sports, but to have no fans there at all. Here's LeBron's take on that.
Listen, you know, you heard my comment when I first was asked about it. And this is before, I guess the discussion had already been asked. So they hit me with a blind question, but still, I still think the same way. I still think like having a game without fans is just, what is sport? What is the worst sport without fan? There's no excitement. There's no crying. There's no joy. There's no back and forth. There's no rhyme or reason that you want to go on a road and just dethrone the home team because of their fans and vice versa. Like that's what also brings up the competitive side of the players to know that you're going on the road in a hostile environment. And yes, you're playing against that opponent in front of you, but you really want to kick the fans' ass too. You know?
Oh, show.
Yeah, so, you know, to get back on the floor, I would love it. I'm not going to sit here like and say that, like, just get out there, and to get back on the floor, you know, 5-on-5. But I mean, we can do that in scrimmages. We can, let's just go to each other's practice facility, put out a camera and just scrimmage, you know, and live stream it.
Bron, don't worry. I have the solution. I have the solution. When we come back, we're going to talk about LeBron, not what is the point of playing without having fans. I got the solution, LeBron. By the way, great stuff right there. Road Trippin' Podcast, Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye, Allie Clifton, all that sound came from the from that podcast. When we come back, playing without fans. Fans are 100% everything. But I have a solution. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. I'm still waiting for all those stacks. You know, we got promos saying that I'm making all these stacks. What are they talking about? Where's the money? I'm still waiting for the money.
It's because you're making the stacks.
Sitting in my studio. All right. So this is one of the things that, you know, when we look at this upcoming year, and I love to hear from LeBron, by the way, let me first off just say, how great is it just to hear from LeBron, you know, just to get his thoughts on everything going on. He's done some great things. He's done some really cool things where he's done some stuff on IG. He went live on IG and talked about some different things, topics that, you know, we used, thinking that maybe the big three when he was in Miami would get broken up if they didn't win that championship against the Boston Celtics and then the Oklahoma City Thunder. That was their first one, his first championship. But to see him, to hear him kind of open up about conversations, and the last clip that I just played talking about specifically just on playing without fans. I get it, by the way. I mean, if he as a player looks at playing without fans, me as a fan, I watched the game right after the season was canceled. There was a soccer match that was still going on. I can't remember. It might have been in Mexico. It was still going on. Maybe it was a European game, but I'm pretty sure it was Mexico. And I was like, all right, what is this like without fans? Let me take a listen. I listened for maybe 5 minutes, and I was not listened. I was watching it for 5 minutes, and I was like, yeah, I'm good without this. I'm good without this. We had a conversation yesterday on Crosstalk, and Mace was mentioning to me, would I be interested in, and do you think it's a good idea to play that crowd noise? And it's obviously it's fabricated, it's fake, it's not real fan noise because there's no fans there. But just to play, almost how they used to do, or maybe they still do in some talk shows or sitcoms or whatever the case is. I'm a fan of that. I actually think that would sound better than no noise at all. Now, I love what LeBron was just mentioning there. He's saying, listen, part of the allure of going on the road is when the Lakers have all those fans that are booing them. Or think about this season with the Dodgers. Everywhere the Dodgers go, Dodgers are supposed to be the favorite to win the World Series. So when they're going up to San Francisco, you kind of like some of those boos. You kind of like when you have a big-time division matchup and the Dodgers are being booed and it's you know, a sold out crowd on a Saturday night looking forward to watch their team go up against one of the best in Major League Baseball. But we're in a predicament, we're in a situation right now where I think all of us would agree, if we just got sports, you know, in a perfect world, yes, we want this and we want that and we want this to look like this and we want that to look like that. We want that laundry list of things that we would love to have. But when you don't have sports, period. Oh, I'll take some fan noise, some fake fan noise all day long. And I know it's not the, you know, complete answer, but maybe it gives a little bit. By the way, for TV purposes, it would sound better. For radio purposes, it would probably sound better. I was telling Mason yesterday, I said, Mace, I want the same sound bite. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, this has got to be set up right. If, you know, it's just a turnover on the court, you can't have the same for a buzzer beater. I'm like, no. I want the buzzer beater noise, even when the shot clock, it's a shot clock violation. If it's a backcourt violation, I want the same noise. I don't know how they would do it, but it's definitely one of those things that at this point, I'll take anything, you know, and I think everybody would. And listen, every single day is a different day. I think I'm going to actually scale back on the news side of things. I've been watching way too much news. I think I'm going to scale it back. I don't know if other people feel the same way, that they're kind of overwhelmed. And especially for me, I've spent two straight weeks of just watching it, but I think I'm going to scale it back a little bit. And as some of these, you know, sports stories come out, which I feel like there's been some great content that's come out even in the middle of all this. Specifically, there are more storylines. You know, you obviously pay attention to that as well. Okay, so how about Magic here? So Magic was on First Take a little bit earlier today as well. So we go from you know, obviously being in the position that we're in right now, and every day just kind of curious to see, okay, what's going to come out in the world of sports. Magic was fantastic on First Take today as well. This is I'm going to kind of play out some of the storylines here, but Magic was talking about with Molly Kierum, with Max Kellerman, with Stephen A. Smith, was talking about specifically how the Lakers were rolling. They were in a position where this does hurt the Los Angeles Lakers. It hurts them where they are right now because the Lakers were playing such good basketball. Here's Magic Johnson on First Take. How does the break affect the Los Angeles Lakers?
Oh, it's definitely going to affect them more because they were playing so well. They were on top of their game, both on the offensive side and the defensive side. And then a guy like LeBron, who was playing, I mean, this was one of his best seasons ever, and dominating the league, it affects him too. Because, you know, when you're rolling, when you're playing well, as an individual and as a team, you want to keep playing. You don't want to break. And so it's going to affect him. It's just like Milwaukee and the Greek Freak. It's going to affect them too. So you want, as soon as possible, for the league to get back.
I love when Magic was talking about that, and I think LeBron had a similar take. Isaiah Thomas hopped on First Take as well. Chemistry is everything. Everything in the league, and the Lakers were, you know, clicking better than any other team. After the Lakers beat the Clippers on that Sunday, you know, you felt like, okay, the road to a championship is 100% going to be through the Los Angeles Lakers. Magic, also on First Take, talked about how the Lakers are the best team in the West.
The Lakers showed me something on that last matchup with the Clippers. The Clippers small team was beating the Lakers big team. And Frank Vogel made a great adjustment in that game three. He said, okay, I'm not going to go big anymore. I'm going to go small. And when they picked up Morris, they were able to be more versatile. And sure enough, he played that small team. The Lakers small team was better than the Clippers small team. And I think now that was the key adjustment that Frank Vogel made. And LeBron James played heads up, and here Max is. I know he's ready to jump on Kawhi and everything. LeBron James did a good defensive job on Kawhi. Kawhi still got his points, but he made him work for his points. And I love seeing LeBron play on both ends of the court right now. And the Lakers right now are the best team in the West, and they will go to the championship if they resume playing again. I think LeBron will be playing against Milwaukee in the NBA Finals.
All right, that's Magic's take right there, and I think a lot of people would agree with him. And I love how he told Kellerman right there. I know Max wants to hop in and talk Kawhi because Max has been pretty adamant all season that he likes the Clippers over the Lakers. We'll see if we get that opportunity. I don't know if this break is going to help the Lakers. It's going to hurt the Lakers. But when you get to hear Magic and LeBron talk today and talk specifically about the season, I agree that, you know, the Lakers, that was those statement wins that they had, which seemed like 5 years ago, just 2 weeks ago, those statement wins that the Lakers had were kind of a telling sign of where the Lakers were heading. And Magic actually went on to talk about how he feels like against the Bucks, they would play a 7-game set against the Bucks, they would win. But he gave the Milwaukee Bucks actually a ton of credit, gave them a lot of credit of where they are, and just kind of the position that the Bucks were in as well. Okay, so let's go off of sports for a quick second. Let's just talk a little bit about how we get through today, and how leading up to today's show, I think this was the first day today where I was like, I got to get out of the house. Got to get out of the house. Now, granted, I don't just sit here in the house all day long. Jess, Curtis, I don't know if you guys are kind of starting to feel this as well. When the season's going on and, you know, we're obviously doing our shows from the studio, I'm never home, never home. And now all of a sudden, all I'm doing is at home. Man, this is an adjustment like I've never seen before.
I mean, it's not a real big adjustment for me. I'm very comfortable with being for me. Although I'm not home a lot, too, because I work and I have two jobs. And my other job, I'm still commuting. So it's not like I'm locked in my house. I still go out for that one job. And then even then, I'll still, you know, walk outside, you know.
I got to spend more time outside.
Just because it's outside. And I mean, honestly, the past couple of days have been beautiful outside. Today was a marvelous day. It was it would have been absolutely wonderful day for baseball. And I'm so sad. And I was supposed to go to tomorrow's game as well, and it's just
supposed to go to opening day, or you were supposed to go to Friday's game?
No, I was going to go to opening night.
Opening night.
Tomorrow night. Yeah, today was opening day, and tomorrow was opening night. I was legit going to buy that Wednesday. I think I stopped myself. I was like, I'll buy them tomorrow, as in Thursday. But then, you know, the news of Rudy Gobert happened, and after that, I was like, I'm not going to buy the tickets because I'm
okay. We can talk about this. We got halftime coming up, so we can get a little bit more into what was supposed to be opening day. And that's actually a great example.
I'm gonna go put my Dodger hat on.
Go to the game. Throw your Dodger hat on. You should. All right, halftime coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sleeve with Curtis. Fantastic beat. Good work back there. How are you guys doing?
You're doing good. Staying nice and cozy in quarantine.
Halftime of the show. Everybody at home. Curtis holding it down at the studio.
Curtis is risking it all.
I think I'm holding it down in the whole building.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Probably. I mean, there's nobody in there. I will say this. I will say that because of what we're doing and everybody quarantining and all that stuff, I assume that all these offices have never been cleaner. I assume that the environment, just having that many less cars on the road and all that stuff, probably as clean as the air has been. So there's some good that can come out of this as well.
Yeah. Oh, there's, if you really take a step back and look at the entire picture, there are definitely a lot of positives you can take
out of learning,
that.
Right? Like, and just 100%. The learning aspect of saying, okay, you know what, this is how easily viruses can be passed on. Make sure you wash your hands. Make sure when you go to the grocery store, you do A, B, C, like all this type of stuff. So we can find some positives through
this whole thing should be a learning lesson for everyone. Is maybe we should take some things a little more seriously every now and then.
You know what? What I like before we get into this, I like how some of these players, we actually have some good clips. I'll play them a little bit later in the show, but how Steph Curry yesterday did that Facebook Live with Dr. Fauci. I like how a lot of players are trying to, you know, use their platforms to raise awareness. So we can,
that's a great idea.
They got to keep doing it because here's the thing. There's a lot of a younger generation that won't listen to a politician, won't listen to a mayor, a governor. They just don't connect with them. So players,
some of them won't even listen to their parents.
And players have a not just a responsibility, but they have an incredible influence. So hopefully they keep doing it.
Yeah, and players like Steph Curry know the influence they have, and they're choosing to do stuff like that, which is a great thing to do.
What do you got over there, Jess?
All right. So over the weekend, I have no idea where it's from, but this popped up on my timeline, and it was too good not to share.
Okay.
Stephen A. and Jamie Foxx were hanging out. And Fox got dressed up. He actually got makeup on. He got a little Stephen A. hair and some really thick eyebrows, if you watch the video, to look like Stephen A. And he impersonated him quite well, I might add. Curtis has the clip, so go ahead and hit that clip, Curtis.
That's right. I'll take the D out of Dan Tony. After all of these years of playing, he hasn't figured out.
That's Jamie Foxx.
You have to play defense there sometimes. Deep, but they're
I don't sound like that.
I mean, let's just be clear. First of all, you're my brother.
I love you.
My younger brother.
Twin brother.
Step. Twin brother.
Oh, his stepdad.
He's still younger. He's still on my stepfather's side.
On my stepfather's side.
Period. Let's be clear.
So that was all Jamie Foxx. Stephen A. talked like once in there.
That's not bad, by the way.
That is amazing.
That's not bad.
Added makeup was fantastic, but Fox is a low key really good impersonator. Like, I think he can really do really good voices and impersonations.
Jamie Foxx, I don't think there's anything that he's not good at. He's one of the top notch actors. Freaking had incredible music out of nowhere. I'm like, what the hell? That's Jamie Foxx. I mean, I feel like there's nothing Jamie Foxx can't do.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those people who can kind of do a little bit of it all. And for whatever reason, he just can do it all really good. So, you know, out of that came to mind, who's your favorite impressionist or person that does an impression?
Okay, Curtis, you got one?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, there's some obvious ones, but it's like everyone kind of has an impression, but it's really hard sometimes to get a really good one. You almost need to have that. You have to get, like, their pattern right and stuff. So it's really hard sometimes to do that. But I have a couple
Caliendo,
on the top of my head.
Caliendo kills it. No, go. You have a list. Perfect.
I mean, Caliendo does really good, obviously. And then there's I don't remember his name, but there's this guy that was on SNL. He did a really good job. I just don't remember his name right now. But he's
what was his bit
as well?
What was he? What was the
it was recent.
Yeah.
Well, I'll stay with SNL for a quick second. You guys remember back in the days, Will Ferrell used to do President Bush.
Oh, Will Ferrell's fantastic.
Will Ferrell would try to do Bush, and just his like demeanor, the way he acted. Alec Baldwin, don't forget, was doing Trump, right?
Oh, Alec Baldwin got elected. Trump was really good. Yeah.
Baldwin was good as well. What other ones were on there from and which Frank Caliendo had? Oh, did Frank Caliendo used to do Madden?
Yeah, no. Yes, he did. Frank Caliendo did. He does Madden. He does Jake. He does Jake Gruden really.
Gruden. Well. Yeah, it's Gruden. It's Gruden that he does really well.
And Mason in Ireland had him once have Madden talk to Gruden at the same time too. So they get pretty particular. He's really good at what he does.
That's awesome.
I love it. Yeah, one of my favorite persons who does impression is old K-Rock. Kevin Embiid host Ralph Garman. He actually holds his own podcast now. He's a co-host with Kevin Smith on the Hollywood of Babylon, one of my favorite podcasts.
It's a good podcast.
That's a fantastic. If you, it's
more
a very
comedy
niche
or
podcast.
What is it?
Oh, it's 100% comedy. But it's a lot of kind of adult crude humor. But it's so funny. And Ralph and Kevin have a great chemistry that is just you listen and you can't help but to laugh. And Ralph Garman does the best impressions. He does. Yeah, actually, for one of the podcasts I actually heard, someone actually written down all the impressions he did, and like he did them all. Like he had like over 60 impressions.
That's a talent right there. I mean, that's not something easy to do.
Jay Farrow's the guy I was thinking of.
Oh, okay, yeah, he does. He did Barack Obama, I think, right?
He does Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy too. He does a lot.
Yeah,
Chappelle is great too, but Chappelle does everything the way he wants to do it. So like he's not trying to be exactly that person.
He's doing Chappelle as that person.
Exactly. Basically. And that is kind of unique in its own, where it's like, all right, he's only going to do so much of the other person, but it's as organic Chappelle as can be.
Mm-hmm, definitely. All right. So moving on. Alan, have you heard of the new streaming platform called Quibi?
No, I don't think I have.
So it's a new streaming platform. It's actually founded by former Walt Disney Studios chairman and DreamWorks Animation COO Jeffrey Katzenberg, and it's run by the former CEO of HP and eBay, Meg Whitman. Okay. And it's basically content to watch on your phone, horizontally or vertical, and they're all under 10 minutes. So it's a quick way to watch shows, and they're – it's going to be launched on April 6th, so in about 10, 11 days from now.
Wait, but they're like 10-minute shows?
10-minute shows. All the shows are 10 minutes or under. But a lot of big-name celebrities are involved. Steven Spielberg apparently has like a horror anthology he's doing. Guillermo del Toro, Kevin Hart, Jennifer Lopez. And at launch, Liam Hemsworth's going to have a show that's called The Most Dangerous Game. Queen Latifah is going to have a show where the show went on. And the big one that's being advertised right now is Chrissy's Court, where it's like I'm Judge Judy, but with Chrissy Teigen.
This sounds like a very, very good idea.
There is a line. Oh, perfect.
Where, you know, we watch, I don't know about you guys, and I mentioned it to Mason Ireland, and I maybe I just consume it differently. YouTube is my consumption. And
oh, same
probably
for me.
A lot of the reason why I'm consuming YouTube, like one time I told Mace, I'm like, Mace, I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube. And he's like, what do you mean? Like you watch, you know, cats? Like, you know, like there's people just think, people think there's just like compilations of certain things. No, YouTube, like even there's a lot of times I'll send you guys, SportsCenter and ESPN are putting a ton of videos, but they're condensed. Instead of watching all of First Take, I'm watching 7-minute clip here, 9-minute yep. clip here. Like that happens a lot. But to have a show that is 10 minutes long, that sounds very unique. And it sounds like in today's day and age where our attention, you know, we have such a attention deficit where you only consume things for just a certain amount of time. It sounds like a freaking great idea.
Oh, I know. I absolutely love it. And one of the cool things I like about it is you can watch it on your phone vertically or horizontal. Like it's, I guess they shot it and you know,
where you have
the geniuses on them, where you can watch it vertically and it, you'll make sense to you. The shot is shot for you to see your phone vertically or horizontally. So, I mean, it's, this has a lot of enormous potential and has a lot of money behind it. And if you go to their website, right now, Quibi.com, Quibi.com, you can sign up for a 90-day free trial.
Okay.
So, I'm definitely intrigued on that, and there's a lot of big names attached to it. So, I'm definitely going to check it out.
Well, if you know, the question was if I would have some interest in a service that's has seasons that are 10 minutes long. I mean, or not seasons, but episodes 10 minutes long.
And they're saying new episodes every day too.
That's
so it's 10 minutes long.
Really,
new episodes every day.
Really good idea. There's, by the way, there are things. There's content I consume right now that there's no set time of how long it is. But it comes up every single day or Monday through Friday or whatever the case is. And it could be 7 minutes. It could be 4 minutes. It could be 12 minutes. And I pretty much watch it. And these are certain individuals that I follow.
No, definitely. I do the same thing whenever I'm like, you know, I just need 10 minutes to kill or whatever. I usually just go on YouTube anyways and I find a video on that. So, but this can definitely change it. But it's going to be interesting too because this is the only way you'll be able to view the content is on your phone. I don't think they're going to make an app for like TVs or something. It's made specifically for phone viewing.
Got it.
So it's going to be interesting. All right, moving on. Former Dodger pitcher Dan Heron is auctioning off his bobblehead collection. He has a collection of over 300 bobbleheads that he's auctioning off to help people in the, you know, with everything that's going on. He's planning
raise money for COVID-19 and yep.
And along with the bobblehead, he's also writing personal notes.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, he has a bobblehead of AJ Ellis when he was with the Dodger. On his note, he writes, "At this point in my life, he's the only person I could beat in a race." And he's writing a note for all the notable players. He has one for Derek Jeter. I got him out at the last All-Star game at the old Yankee Stadium, a career highlight. Clayton Kershaw could absolutely not grow a beard this thick. Vladdy Guerrero, I hit him on purpose once. So happy he didn't charge me. But I think the best one, and it's so typical, Zank Greinke. He said, "Will tell me selling my bobbleheads is a dumb idea." And these are going for a lot of money just to, you know.
And it's going for a good cause. So I think there's some of this too where it's like, you know, people will spend it because they know that it's going to a good cause.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Molly Knight has a story up on Athletic all about this, and she even tweeted out, just in the first hour that this auction was up, over $2,000 raised. And this early this morning. So, it's a good thing. So that got me to asking, you know, to him, to Dan Harden, those bobbleheads are probably like the coolest thing he owns or one of the coolest things he owns. Alan, what is the coolest thing that you own?
I'll tell you, you know, things that mean something to me. I have actually – I got a really cool autographed photo, and, you know, it's framed and everything. It's Magic and Bird, and it's got the Lakers logo on it. It's got the Celtics logo on it, and it's actually Larry Bird's retirement, and it's just a great photo of the two of them they're smiling. It's not in the heat of the competition. It's towards the end of both of their careers. And there's Larry Bird, at the Boston Garden, and Magic. And what makes the picture so unique, Magic didn't have an undershirt. So the Celtics gave him a shirt. It was a Boston Celtics shirt. And Bird knew that he had that shirt on. So Magic buttoned up his warm-up so nobody can see it. And Bird ripped off some of his warm-up so that it showed. So it's like, you know, think about the competition these two greats had against each other. By the way, it started in college. And, you know, they've had amazing documentaries about the two of them and just kind of their path together. They went from hating each other to really being good friends. And I just love that photo because, you know, the Lakers, obviously my favorite team growing up. And it's just such a great photo of the two of them, not in a fierce competition, but in like a respectful, playful manner towards the end of their career. So that's a cool one that I own.
Nice. What about you, Chris? What's the coolest thing you own?
That's funny you ask, Jess. So I used to be a Buccaneers fan when I was a little kid, and the first game I ever watched was the Super Bowl where they beat the Raiders, and this was
John Lynch, right?
Yeah,
it was a John Lynch.
Yeah,
this was before
John Lynch, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, mm-hmm. Keyshawn Johnson.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm leading into. So before I worked here or anything, I had this, I think it was in middle school, I had this, those NFL shop has those jerseys that you can customize and put your last name on? So yeah. I had a Bucks jersey with my name on it, and I thought it was so cool. And long story short, it got signed by Key.
Oh, no way!
And I still have it. I'm not a Bucks fan anymore, but I don't really collect a lot of stuff. That's the one signed thing I have, and it's kind of funny that I ended up here. But I have a signed Bucks jersey with my last name on it that Key signed.
That is so great. You should,
by the way,
definitely bring that in next time you work in the morning show just to show them.
There's a lot of things that, and I know, we're here at a sports radio station, but it's not uncommon for when you propose a question like that, some of the most, important things to, whatever individual that is, it's kind of built around sports. I got a photo with Chick Hearn when I was 12, 13 years old. That's like the greatest thing in the world to me, but that's very common for a lot of people. And I know, again, we're all in the sports industry, but I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that are listening and saying, yep, that sports item or that sports figure means the most to them.
And it's especially different when you're a kid. It could be anything. It could be the lamest thing ever, but
sure.
A kid loving it makes, when you're a kid and you love it, it makes it different.
It's so funny because, when I think of the coolest things that I have, it's stuff that I bought more recently, not even as a kid, but it's stuff that kind of takes me back as a kid. This first item doesn't take me back to a kid, but I have a Legends replica of the Infinity Gauntlet from Avengers Infinity War on my dresser that I can put on and I can move the fingers, and it's by far the coolest thing. And then I also built my own lightsaber also at Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland in Savi's lightsaber workshop.
So working at Disney for you is like
it's fantastic.
For the Disney company has to be like the perfect alignment for you.
Oh, it is 100%. 100%. It's sports and it's Disney. It's like I'm right where I need to be. So
and it's better than working in the park. Take it from me.
No comment on that. I've never worked in the park.
I used to work there. I was like, I'm glad I'm like a step removed.
Well, it's
from
probably
that.
Just crazy too to be there every day and it's hectic, and it's like going a couple times a year is all good, but to be there, the entire time.
What about going for 3,000 days straight?
That guy, man, that's amazing. That's crazy to me. And by the way, that would have none of that would have probably changed unless it got shut down.
That guy would have hit more than 3,000. We probably would have still been just talking about 3,000. All right. I got a game for you. I told you guys I'd have a game for you today. So I'm bringing back the synopsis game. This time I set it up right. I have the answers, and we are going to have a winner because I have an uneven amount of synopsis. So the first one.
Coming right after him.
New York cops toll in obscurity as lowly desk jockeys until a big break finally gives them a chance to tackle real police work. Is this a synopsis for End of Watch, The Other Guys, or Triple Frontier?
Why don't you go first, Curtis?
I'll go The Other Guys.
I'll go End of Watch.
Oh, Alan, you disappoint me. It's The Other Guys. Curtis is up 1-0. Come on.
Jesus, I actually freaking love that movie too. I guess I wasn't.
That was a gimme. I threw that one in there, so it's a gimme.
By the way, I thought because you said other guys, I'm like, okay, well, it's not going to be that. I wasn't even paying attention. Go, let's do it again. I still got a chance.
Yes. All right. Three buddies with big dreams go from underachieving slackers to badass warriors when their posh hotel is taken over by terrorists. Is this the synopsis to On My Block, Game Over Man, or Daybreak?
Go ahead, Curtis.
I'll go Daybreak.
Daybreak. Alan?
Say them again.
On My Block, Game Over Man, or Daybreak?
On My Block.
On My Block. Both of you are wrong. It is Game Over Man. It's the movie starring The Workaholics that's on Netflix.
Okay, so the best I could do is tie. Let's do it. Final one.
Oh, no, I got three more. Don't trip.
We're going to have a different one.
I did five.
You did a best of five. Okay, best of five. Yes, all right, let's go.
All right. During a stop at a remote cabin deep within the woods, a group of teens behind turning – wait. A group of evil teens turn into flesh-eating zombies.
Okay.
Is this a synopsis for Evil
Dead? Titanic.
No, it's not Titanic. Evil Dead, listen to the responses, please. Evil Dead, Resident Evil, or Cabin in the Woods?
I'll go first again. Cabin in the Woods.
Curtis says Cabin in the Woods. Alan?
Karate Kid 2.
That is not a choice.
What is the what was the first one again?
Evil Dead, Resident Evil. One of those two, because Curtis said Cabin in the Woods. Or do you? If you think it's Cabin in the Woods, you can say it's Cabin in the Woods.
I'll go Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods. Oh, you. Hey, Alan, what is going on? It's Evil Dead.
It's Evil Dead?
Sam Raimi's. Have you ever seen Evil Dead? Sam Raimi's great horror classic.
No, the one I should have got was Other Guys. Let's keep it rolling.
All right. The reputations of two cops depend on finding one little piece of cardboard, a very special little piece of cardboard. Is this a synopsis for Step Up, Cop Out, or Cop Car?
I'll go Cop Out.
Both of you say Cop Out?
No, I'll go Cop Car.
Cop Car. So, Curtis, you said Cop Out?
Yeah.
Just make sure. And Curtis has already won. Curtis got it again. Come on, Alan.
Curtis, don't worry, bro. Enjoy this right now. As long as he asks things I have no idea about, you're going to dominate. Did you know those, Curtis?
Do you want to feel bad? Everything that he did, I guessed on, and I still beat
him. Well, I guessed as well, and I didn't get him.
Well, you win some, you lose some, but you live.
Go. You live to fight. Okay. Cups. Is that it right there?
That's it right there. I'll make more of the synopsis game later, and we'll try again next week for you. I'll try to, and I threw you a gimme the first one. I guess I'll try to make it.
You can do it tomorrow. No, do it tomorrow. Doesn't matter. Do it anyway.
I'm gonna try to come up with a different game tomorrow. And of course, we'll do the return of wrestler or rapper.
I like it. Sounds good. Appreciate it, Jesse.
You got it.
Let's do this when we come back. I mentioned it for a quick second. I want so Steph Curry did something on Facebook Live yesterday. I don't know if you guys got a chance to listen to this at all, but very creative. I love the fact that Steph was doing something that I think, you know, at a time like this, players got to flex their muscle as much as possible. What I mean by that is they got to find ways to kind of reach out to that younger audience. So we'll get into that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, so one of the things that I'm a fan of, that I like what's going on right now, and I'm sure there's a lot of sports fans out there that feel the same way. Athletes stepping up. I can't tell you how important it is for some of these athletes to step up. So this is what I'm talking about. You have obviously a younger generation that maybe they're not going to listen to a politician. They're not going to listen to the president. They're not going to listen to a VP, a vice president, or a mayor, or whatever the case is. They just don't. They don't relate to any of those people. But you know, they do relate to. And this is a lot of kids and teenagers. They look up to professional athletes. So they look up to the LeBrons of the world and the I don't know, Tom Brady's of the world. They're just naming the cream of the crop. So Steph Curry yesterday did a Q&A with Dr. Fauci and Tony Fauci, Anthony Fauci. That's the lead of the CDC, and he's been all over the place. Literally every time that you see him, he's done a fantastic job too. Smart for him to hit on all these networks just to try and educate people as much as they can about the virus. But I wanted to play a couple of the clips, and the reason why I want to do it for two reasons. Number one, it's great for Steph Curry to do that. Number two, it's great information for sports fans in general. Here's Steph Curry on the biggest piece of misinformation about COVID-19. He was doing this with Dr. Fauci.
Just from your vantage point, you've been front and center from the start, again, spreading, you know, accurate, truthful information and trying to I know things change on the daily and you're following that trend, but what's the biggest piece of, I guess, misinformation and that you know that's kind of been out and, you know, for public consumption, and what would you kind of say to correct that whatever issue that is?
You know, I think you brought it up in one of the questions that you asked me. This dichotomy between people who are being frightened to death of it versus people who don't even believe it and think it's something trivial that you don't have to worry about. I'd like to get the people in the country to realize that we are dealing with a serious problem. It's something that we've modified our lives. It's not convenient to lock yourself in. It's not convenient to not do the kinds of things. It's not convenient for you not to be playing basketball. But we're going through a period of time now where we've got to, as a country, pull together, don't get frightened, don't get intimidated, use the energy to be able to confront it and do the kinds of things that'll put an end to it. So I want to get rid of that misconception that there's extremes. Either the world is going to end or we don't want to do anything. It isn't that. It's somewhere in the middle.
So two reasons why I want to play that. Number one, I just love that some of these athletes are doing things and taking advantage of their influence. And number two is good information. Because I think right now it's easy to read a lot of articles. I definitely do it. It's easy to watch TV and just kind of get the headline, the top piece of what some of the info is. And then it's a whole different ballgame when Dr. Fauci, the one that I think everybody is depending on in the States to just get as much information as possible out there. I love that he's the one that's presenting it, and Steph Curry's doing it with him on Facebook Live. All right, I got one more. The differences between COVID-19 and the flu.
You know, how is COVID-19 different from the flu in terms of, you know, how it, you know, interacts with the body and just how it spreads?
Well, it's similar in some respects, Steph, in that it's a respiratory illness that's transmitted by the respiratory route. It gives a degree of pathology that's mostly pneumonia. The reason it's different is that it's very, very much more transmissible than flu, and more importantly, it's significantly more serious. Let me give you some very quick numbers.
Okay.
Overall mortality of seasonal flu that you and I confront every year is about 0.1%. The overall mortality of coronavirus is about 1%. Sometimes, like in China, it was up to 2 to 3%, which means it's at least 10 times more serious than the typical influenza. So when people kind of compare it, in some respects, it has some similarities, but it's really, really different in its degree of seriousness.
So there's a great article, Nick Friedel, on ESPN right now, where they just kind of talk a little bit about the chat that he had with Steph Curry. But here's the more important thing. Lasted about 30 minutes long, averaged close to 50,000 viewers. Even President Barack Obama was on there on Instagram Live watching it as well. So that's a great thing. You know, I've said this, and I'll kind of try to find some good twists to this as well. This is a tough time. This is not it's perfect the way Dr. Fauci mentioned it, who's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. It's inconvenient. It puts a stop to our life, but it's also important to send as many messages out as you can. And there's been some athletes that have gone out of their way. You know, Marcus Smart, first of all, tested positive, but went out on social media to talk about how important this is to treat this the right way. That's the right way for him, I think, to approach it. And I respect that he did that. Carl Anthony Towns, he's in a tough situation where his mom, and he was very emotional, 5-minute video that went out a few days ago, 5-minute video on him opening up about his mom being tested positive. And then, you know, at one point was in a coma. And I haven't heard too much after that, but I respect the fact that he went out there to use his platform to educate as many people as possible. And then the list goes down. It could be Steph Curry. It could be coaches that have done it. Giannis, Kevin Love donating, Kuzma, LeBron doing their own thing. There's nothing better than that. So in times like this, you got to have people that, you know, certainly try to step up. And I thought yesterday, Steph Curry doing what he did with Dr. Fauci was not only a smart idea, but it was extremely thoughtful. It was responsible, and it was probably important. We're going to switch gears when we come back. So Jeremy Fowler, who's an ESPN senior NFL reporter, and I think does a fantastic, fantastic job of just covering the NFL for ESPN. He'll come on. We'll talk some local. We'll talk a little Rams, talk a little bit about the Chargers, and get his thoughts on just the NFL season in general. We'll do that all coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. We have Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter. Jeremy, appreciate you taking some time and talking some football with us here on the show.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me.
So I want to actually, I'll get your thoughts on this because I think this has been an interesting conversation the last couple of days. I know I've hit on it, and I'm sure it's going to just continue to be a development as we get closer to April 23rd. Just your thoughts on the draft. Do you think that date is going to stay set? I had, you know, obviously some great articles on ESPN. Adam Scheffner yesterday was talking a little bit about some of the complications with leaving that date as is and not the GMs being so crazy about that date. What do you think happens with the draft? You think it gets pushed at all?
Well, I think right now they're aiming for the status quo, and I do expect that to remain because the league has had this for a few weeks now, and they haven't been willing to budge. And so the coronavirus story is ever-evolving, so I think they know they have to be nimble. If there are enough outcries a week or two from now, maybe that would change. But the fact that they can do things electronically, you know, they know they're not going to put on a glitzy show in Las Vegas now. It's just about getting the draft picks to the people. They feel like they can do that and that the teams can adjust accordingly. Now, the general managers, I understand their beef that, you know, there's only so much that they can do scouting-wise, and so, that, you know, they might compromise millions of dollars if they miss on draft picks that they couldn't research enough. But I think the league feels like they have another month. They've done all their scouting for the most part. I think they're entrusting the teams to get that done in an orderly fashion.
Yeah, Jim, I guess that's what I was going to ask. Is it a legitimate, you know, gripe? Can you see where some of these GMs are coming from that just structurally a lot of the facilities are closed, the draft rooms that they have? Like, is there an angle enough there for the owners and for the commissioner to say, you know what, why are we rushing this thing? Let's push it back a couple weeks, a month, or whatever the case is. And it sounds like the momentum for you is the owners and the commissioner are going to get their way.
Yeah, that's the momentum for me. But I will say, just because of the nature of the story, things change daily, hourly. And so as a result, I know the league is prepared to be as diligent as it needs to be to potentially change things. But, you know, their reasoning is that, you know, they can put on the show and the draft picks will be made. But I think for the teams, it's not just the scouting. It's a legitimate beef that the day of the draft, things happen quickly and you're on the clock for just a few minutes. And you need to be in a war room. And so if you can't, that can be very difficult. So maybe there's an adjustment where they give teams more time. I know my colleague Adam Schefter mentioned doing seven rounds over 7 days.
That's right.
Maybe maybe the allure of that would be that you give more, a little bit more time in between picks to make sure that electronically, as these teams are doing things from remote locations and not in one war room, they can get everything done that they need to.
Jeremy, you had a good article on ESPN Plus just kind of highlighting some of the different things that every team around the NFL have done this offseason. For the Rams here locally in L.A., the big story is the cost-cutting, right? They're in a position right now, Todd Gurley no longer a part of the Rams. Clay Matthews, obviously, no longer a part of the Rams. Just, I want to get your thoughts. What's next for the Rams? What do you expect from the Rams? And as we get, you know, obviously closer to the regular season starting, you feel like they're in a good position, or they're moving the wrong direction?
Well, I think it could go either way. I think it's delicate with them because, you know, they've allocated almost all their funds into four or five players, mm-hmm. you know, and so Jalen Ramsey is next. They've traded two first-round picks for him. They need to get a deal done with him. I would try to do it now rather than later because the price is only going to go up. And, you know, I do think it comes down to who's going to help them win along with cost-cutting. You know, Todd Gurley with the knee issues, I think they felt like if he was still going to result in a few more wins for them yearly, then they would keep him, you know. The salary was just a excuse to move on. Probably the same with Clay Matthews, who's aging. And so this is a team that, you know, depth is an issue because of that cost, but you can always add that through the draft. You know, the pressure's on them to draft well, even though they don't have a lot of first-round picks coming up. But those mid-round picks are going to be crucial for them. But, you know, you still have Aaron Donald. You still have pretty good receivers. And, you know, Andrew Whitworth is an interesting signing because they put a lot of money into him. Where, you know, I didn't think he had a great year last year. So right now it seems to be trending downward. But, you know, Sean McVay is a guy that most people have a great deal of faith in, and there's still moves to be made in the next few months, probably starting with negotiating with Ramsey.
Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter, hopping on the Sliwa show. Would you say, Jeremy, arguably the biggest challenge for the Rams might also just be the fact that they're sitting in arguably the toughest division in football? What do you think? Do you expect that the NFC West, how much success they had last season? I'm talking about the 49ers, the Seahawks, obviously Arizona continuing to get better. How tough is that predicament in itself just because of the schedule and the competition right in your own division?
Yeah, that's going to be every year. And I do expect the Cardinals to be better as well. Kyler Murray having a legitimate weapon like DeAndre Hopkins. Cliff Kingsbury's second year. He's worked out the kinks. And so it's got to be, if not the best division of football, then top two or three. But it's like that almost every year. And so I'm interested to see what the Rams' next adjustment is because, you know, you did the play action heavy stuff last year. I think defense is caught up. And so, you know, Sean McVay is a very bright guy. I expect him to make some changes. I don't know if that's, you know, spreading it out more, giving more ownership to Jared Goff, or if you load up on more of the running game and some extra tight ends, you know. So it's going to be on him really to make some significant adjustments this offseason around that offense. You know, I still think the defense has enough pieces to be pretty good, even though they lost some key guys.
So we go from no teams, no NFL teams in L.A. to obviously two. And as I kind of transition here from the Rams to the Chargers, this is a interesting year. And let's just say, and obviously this is a hypothetical, let's assume September will be the opening of SoFi Stadium. They'll have some events before that. For the Chargers, a franchise that here in Los Angeles really just doesn't have that much of a tie or connection. They're way behind trying to catch up, and we'll see if they're ever able to do that. But your thoughts on Tyrod Taylor opening SoFi Stadium for the Chargers? As great as that stadium is going to be, as much as there's going to be some buzz around, you know, this billion, I don't know how many billion dollars going into Inglewood from Stan Kroenke, just having him as your quarterback, you think that's going to be appealing? Do you think that's the right thing for the Chargers to do? You think they should go out and try and get a guy like Cam Newton? Or are you okay with Tyrod Taylor?
Well, I'm okay with Tyrod Taylor if it comes down to just needing to win some games, assuming you're going to get a draft pick with a 6th overall, either moving up or doing what you have to do to get either Tua or Justin Herbert. I think that's probably the play for them at this point because they have pretty good depth in most spots. I mean, this is a team that's not rebuilding. You know, they're not 3 years away. I mean, you know, if they get Tyrod Taylor to not turn over the ball, which he's very good at not doing, and build around the running game and the defense, which is really what Anthony Lynn wants to do at his core, then you win some games enough where you hope the season ticket holders and the fans will come. You know, you took your shot with Tom Brady, and they fell up. You know, they fell short. There's really nobody else to chase that's going to sell tickets unilaterally. I mean, maybe Cam Newton would help a little bit with that, but really Brady was the only play there. And they tried, and it didn't work. And so now you just focus on what's going to maximize winning games. And I think based on the formula, Tyrod Taylor and a draft pick would make some sense. You know, it's a vertical passing game that they have. They want to take shots. Got Keenan Allen and some other guys. You know, I don't think Jameis Winston is completely off the table at this point. You know, at the least, they've looked into him. You know, he's a guy that can go downfield. Now, if you want to not turn over the ball, you know, he's not Anthony Lynn's guy, but maybe they feel like they could reduce, minimize the mistakes with him with some good coaching.
Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter, hopping on the Sliwa show. How close, when you said, you know, they took a shot at Tom Brady, you think, were they in the runnings there? Do you feel like they were close at all? Or do you think Tom Brady was taking meetings, but at the end of the day, Tampa was the place that he knew he was going to go?
Well, it sounds like all indications were the East Coast factor was pretty big for Brady because he has family there and you know, he needs to be close to New York. And so that kind of broke the tie, I think. It's my understanding that, you know, the Chargers never really got a hard no, but they talked to him and understood that it probably wasn't going to happen, and so they moved on. And, you know, I always figured they would at least be in the mix. It just made too much sense not to at least try. But, you know, also you got to remember Tom Brady wanted a 2-year commitment. I think the Chargers probably would have done that, but not every team wanted to do that. You know, the Colts could have been in the mix for him, but they wanted a 1-year commitment with an older quarterback, so they went with Philip Rivers. And so, you know, there are a lot of factors beyond Tom Brady's natural ability to throw the football. And, you know, the Chargers were in it, but I don't think they were going to completely sell out to make it happen either.
So I know there was a lot of predictions from a bunch of NFL reporters on ESPN, actually on ESPN Plus. You said the best offseason addition, just because we were just talking about, you were mentioning the Colts right there, was Philip Rivers to the Colts. Why Philip Rivers? What did you like so much about that move over Tom Brady to Tampa or DeAndre Hopkins, the trade to Arizona? What is it about that fit that you liked more than some of those other offseason moves?
Well, it just made a lot of sense from the beginning. I mean, you know, multiple execs around the league I spoke to even in early January, late December, were saying, you know, watch out for that. That's the move I'm expecting because of his history with Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni, the OC there. And they had a lot of success moving the football over 3 years together in San Diego. And so, you know, he's a guy who could come in and he knows the playbook and there's no adjustment at all. You know, it's a well-run organization, so there's respect there. And it just, you know, just made a lot of sense. I think the fact they gave him a 1-year deal is pretty telling because they know he's a year-to-year quarterback at this point. And, you know, they kind of need to see more from him after the year he had last year with the Chargers. And so, but, you know, the move just made more sense than any other to me and was a natural fit.
Jeremy, a final question here. How are you adjusting to the new norm right now? Probably never get normal, but how is your time being spent? Obviously, you're out in Bristol. Is it just a huge day-to-day adjustment for you, or are you able to get a lot of your stuff done at home?
Yes, it's quite the adjustment. I mean, I make my calls and do my writing here at home, and you know, I have a 9-year-old and a 2-year-old, so we're doing the homeschool thing. And
there you go,
watching some plays, and you know, it's the new normal for everything. You know, at least the playing field is level because all these teams and coaches have to do the same thing. I mean, they're watching their kids at home and trying to work on teleconference, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely an adjustment for all of us. But, Jeremy, I appreciate it. As we get closer to the NFL draft, the season, we'd love to have you back on again. But great insight, and I appreciate you hopping on the show.
Hey, anytime. Appreciate you having me.
All right, that's great stuff there from Jeremy Fowler. As we kind of look at, it's funny because we jump from the NFL, we go to MLB. I talk obviously about the NBA. I think something, you know, that could be significant. led by the NBA happened earlier today. I'll tell you guys what I'm talking about when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, these shows are flying by. By the way, tomorrow, starting at 6 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will get things started. Sedano after that from 10 to noon. Will Kane from noon to 3. Mason and Ireland from 3 to 6. I'll hop on, do some crosstalk. We'll do Sliwa Show at 6:30. Okay, so I think this is going to have a ripple effect. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, usually I'm right about 15% of the time, and I'll take that. I will take that. But I think this is going to have a little bit of a ripple effect. So NBA executives to have their salaries reduced by 20%. Adrian Wojnarowski put out a tweet kind of detailing what was going on. I'll let him explain it. This is Adrian Wojnarowski on SportsCenter.
The NBA is giving essentially a 20% salary reduction across the board among league office executives, among the top 100 or so, many of whom work in the league headquarters in New York, including Commissioner Adam Silver, his deputy Mark Tatum, and then other offices, other league posts around the world. And right now, there are no plans to make any cuts among staff or reductions among administration. But this was essentially a gesture by the highest earning members of the league office to take this 20% reduction immediately in their base salaries, and that's expected to continue through the coronavirus crisis.
All right, that's Woj right there. So the reason why I say I think this is kind of significant, I feel like it could be the start of something. What I'm referring to there is money's not coming in. You know, for all these leagues right now, there's no revenue being generated. And that's obviously eventually going to affect the money coming out. We gave, and I did it too, Sixers owner Josh Harris was actually trying to do something just like this with his employees that were making over $50,000. He is the owner of the Philadelphia 76ers and also the Flyers. And it was talking about reducing their salaries by 20%, working 4 days a week instead of five. And then, you know, he felt some of the backlash there and he backpedaled. And then he said, abort mission. You know what? Pay everybody what they're supposed to be making. But I'm definitely not surprised if this kind of becomes a more growing trend in not just the NBA. And I've said this a few times. I think a lot of people would agree. The NBA has been one of those leagues where they've set the example for all the other sports. So if they're setting the example for all the other sports and they have their top executives cutting their salaries by 20%, and I understand why. There is no games. There is no, you know, as much as I, you know, sit here and say that, look what's going on around the country. You guys see fascinating and unfortunate numbers of how many people filed for unemployment last week. Those numbers came out today. Like, that's what's happening across our country. So you're going to have a lot of different businesses that try and protect as much money as they can. But I think this is fascinating because it's the NBA that does it first. So I guess the question is going to come from here. What trickle down effect does this have on some of the other sports? Does this have on potentially, you know, renegotiating some of these deals with players and everything else? I think very highly of the NBA and Adam Silver, and I think a lot of teams copy it. So we're going to have to kind of see where that goes. All right, fellas, real quick. Yesterday we talked about this before the show concludes here. Jesse, did you start watching? You said you started watching Tiger King?
Yeah, I saw the first two episodes of Tiger King, and I'm probably going to watch the third one before I go to sleep tonight.
I'm three in right now, and Mason and Ireland, they weren't too crazy about it. They saw some of it, but I don't know. It doesn't sound like John's going to watch it through. I think Mason's going to watch it through.
Yeah, no, it's a show, like, I'm not – the topic I'm not really super into, but – excuse me. There's so much happening there. And
that has
it looks
nothing
like,
to do with tigers, by the way. It has nothing to do with animals.
they're just unpeeling more and more layers. Yeah. And I just like, yeah. I need to know more. I want to know more. What is happening? What is going to happen to these guys? And I'm watching and my jaw's like on the floor about some of these stuff that these guys do. And it's just,
Curtis, it's have you
insane,
seen it?
But I'm hooked.
No, I have Curtis? Not had a chance to
no?
see it.
No? Okay. All right. Well, see if you could get, if you can get an episode in. I think if you get, Jesse, would you agree? I think if you watch one, maybe one and a half, you're probably in. You're probably going to end up watching this whole thing.
Yeah,
that's my opinion
I agree. The way they end the episodes kind of hook you in, and they're like, oh, I don't want to watch it, but I kind of have to.
All right, guys, I'd love to keep going on the show, but Tiger King, I got episode 4 coming up. So why don't you guys figure out what to do the rest of the night? Appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. You guys have a great rest of your night.
Yes.